Angelique is a 29-year-old Tutsi. During the genocide, when she was just 16, she was captured by Hutu extremists in the Rwandan capital, Kigali. The Hutu militias were known as Interahamwe, meaning those who attack together.
After the Interahamwe took me to their home, they started raping me. It was like a nightmare. At first I thought I was going to die. Later it turned out I was going to serve as their wife. I had to accept it to stay alive.
She was kept in Kigali for a month. Then the city was liberated by Tutsi rebels. The Interahamwe fled to what is now the Democratic Republic of Congo. The Hutu fighters took Angelique with them.
When I got to Congo, one of the Interahamwe built a small house in the camp and kept me as his wife. But other Interahamwe could also come and rape me there.
The days and weeks stretched into months and years. One day, in her third year of captivity, Angelique pretended she was going to fetch water. She escaped. She made her way back to Kigali. But the uncle she used to live with there had been killed. She was destitute. She was also pregnant.
I felt like I had no human value at all. I kept moving from one place to another. My only hope was God. I kept telling myself, God has another plan for me.
Finally, a fellow genocide survivor took her in. Angelique gave birth to a son. She says she loved the baby, but he also reminded her, every day, of what she'd been through. She looked after the boy for 2 years, but then she became overwhelmed. Angelique gave him to a woman in her hometown, 3 hours away. She returned to Kigali to look for work. Her life in the city is a struggle. She is HIV positive. She waits tables to get by, but doesn't have a steady job or even a home. She splits her wages with the woman bringing up her son. Not only does the boy not know who his father is, he's confused about who his mother is. All over Rwanda, there are similar stories to be found. It's just before Christmas in Butare, southwest Rwanda. Children are gathered in the garden of a women's center. It's run by Sister Genevieve Van Wasberg of the Medical Missionaries of Mary.
Today we are celebrating the Christmas of vulnerable children, children of the women who attend the center, women who are traumatized, women who are surviving through prostitution because of all that they have lived during the genocide or when they were refugees. Many of them have been raped. And the children are quite dysfunctional.
Among this population are children born of rape during the 1994 genocide. They are on the cusp of adolescence. But for the most part, they haven't been told their own stories. Counselors here are rightly protective of them. But social worker Jeanette Hawigimana agrees to speak about the issues they face. For a start, she says, if the child lives with its mother, the child lives in hardship.
In general, these women don't have good lives. They're very poor. Many have HIV or AIDS. Some still suffer injuries from being attacked. Psychologically, they are traumatized. All these factors combine to make their lives very, very hard.
And they have complicated relationships with their children born of rape.
It's hard for them to accept these children. They feel guilt. The child reminds them of their father, of what happened. Sometimes we go and visit these women in their homes. We find the children very dirty. And it's because the woman hasn't accepted the child as her own.
No one has done a comprehensive survey of these children. Advocates believe there are thousands of them, possibly 20,000 or more. Policymakers and caregivers are reluctant to single them out. It's hard to tell how much that's a result of taboos and how much the result of an earnest desire to protect them from stigma and discrimination. Either way, they and their mothers are left isolated and invisible. Over the past couple of years, a New York-based photojournalist called Jonathan Turgovnik has made it his business to track these families down. He's trying to raise awareness about their plight, and he started an organization called Foundation Rwanda to help them.
We had to have a major outreach kind of program to actually find them because they do not seek help. They're ashamed of what happened to them. So we would actually send social workers to villages and try to identify these women. They explained to them what my project is about. And only then, when they agreed to be interviewed, I would come and interview the mothers and photograph them with their children.
Trgovnik has made 3 trips to Rwanda so far. He's interviewed 30 women. Many of them have been rejected by their families.
Many of the families, if they have any surviving relatives, said to them, you're welcome to come back, but without this child. This child, his father is a militia, the militia that actually murdered our family. We cannot accept this child in this house.
Trgovnik says he asks each woman what she remembers thinking when she discovered she was pregnant.
A lot of them would say to me, as soon as I found out I'm pregnant, I wanted to have an abortion, or they would say, I was thinking I should commit suicide. I cannot have a child from a militia. I cannot have someone reminding me of these experiences all my life. We don't know how many actually did that, you know. Maybe they did.
Trgovnik won a major prize for one of his Rwanda photographs. In it, a mother stands in front of her modest house, her arms wrapped around her 12-year-old daughter, born as a result of a brutal rape during the genocide. In the background, slouched against the house, is a slightly older daughter born to the woman and her husband. The husband died in the genocide. The woman tells Trgovnik she's come to realize how much she favors the firstborn daughter and neglects the child of rape.
It's very difficult for these women to say outright, I love this child. From all the women I've interviewed, only one or two said that. Most of them said, look, we don't love them, we don't hate them, we accept them. Some of them even outright said, we do not love this child. And I was pushing that question because my observation is that they do love these children, but it's very difficult for them to admit it because of the circumstances of how it happened.
It's also difficult for them to tell the children who their fathers are. None of the women Trgovnik interviewed has told her child the truth yet. Angelique hasn't told her son the truth either. She's the woman who was enslaved by Hutu militiamen in Congo. Her boy is 10 now. During the school year, he still lives with the woman in Angelique's hometown. During school vacations, he visits Angelique in Kigali. He's starting to believe her when she explains to him that she is his biological mother. But he still calls the woman who's raising him Mommy. Recently, the boy has started asking who his father is. Angelique tells her son his father's gone abroad. She says she wants to tell him the truth when he's older, but she can't imagine telling him the whole truth. Sometimes she thinks she'll just tell him his father was a soldier who died in the war. But that's for the future. Right now, Angelique is plagued by worry.
What is important to me is to figure out how to bring my son to live with me so I can look after him. All I need is to find a job and a place to rent where I can look after myself and my child.
That turns out to be a tall order in today's Rwanda. For The World, I'm Jeb Sharp, Kigali.
Charlie Carpenter is an expert on children born of sexual violence in conflict zones. She has just edited a volume of essays on the topic called Born of War.
I think what's particularly complicated in the case of children that are born of conflict-related rape is the perception on the part of the community that they are of the enemy or of the foreigner.
What happens then? What are the threats that these children face in places, we should say, ranging from Bosnia and Rwanda to Darfur and East Timor, Sierra Leone, Uganda, and elsewhere? What are the threats then that they face?
It seems that they are likelier to be stateless, to not be registered at birth, so they may have problems getting social benefits from the state. They may be very poor. They may be abandoned by their parents. They may have HIV/AIDS. They're at risk of infanticide, neglect, as you heard. And they exhibit psychosocial traumas associated with this attachment difficulty with their mothers, just like other children raised by torture victims. And at the same time, they face the stigma and social exclusion that can manifest in the form of bullying. It can manifest in the form of abuse by caregivers or neighbors.
But how does the child understand that? Because as Jeb said in her story, in many cases, the children who are often now teenagers don't even realize that they were born as a result of the rape of their mother. I mean, if the mothers aren't telling the children, what do these kids understand the stigma to be about?
I can tell you that having spoken with psychotherapists in Bosnia who've worked with these children, they will say the children know. They know something is different about them. They don't ask about their fathers. What does that mean, that they don't ask about their fathers? They understand there's some taboo and there's something wrong with them. If you speak with adult war children, I know some individuals in Norway who grew up in the aftermath of World War II. Their fathers were German soldiers and their mothers were Norwegian women who'd had affairs. And they were similarly stigmatized and institutionalized, treated badly. And as adults, they became activists and actually got compensation from the Norwegian state for their treatment. But when they look back on their childhood, they'll tell me, I always knew something was wrong with me by how people acted. I didn't know what it was, but I knew that something wasn't right about who I was. And all that they say that they would have wanted at the time was for there to be a space to tell the truth and to accept that they did actually belong as well to the post-war nation.
So I wonder then why it is that, as you say in your book, there has never been an international fact-finding study on this problem. I mean, how could it possibly be if thousands of children are affected in the most fundamental ways that there is no government entity even dedicated to children that's studying it?
It's a great question. Why are they so invisible? And this is what the book I'm writing is trying to answer. There's a tendency among the human rights community to treat women and children as a single category and to assume that if you just assist mothers, the children will be fine. But children born to mothers who don't want them, fathered by soldiers of a foreign nationality, just don't fit this conventional thinking very well.
Yeah, and even the fact, of course, it is a conundrum because lots of times nobody wants to out a child mm-hmm. who doesn't know his or her past and who is facing a more difficult future once that child's mm-hmm. past has been revealed.
Yes, certainly there is a well-intentioned desire not to use individual children as poster children for this issue, not to draw attention to them, which might stigmatize them further. But we argue that that's actually not necessary in order to raise some global awareness of the problem. People used to make the same argument about rape. They used to say, well, we can't really address rape because the survivors don't want to talk about it. As a matter of fact, the survivors, many of them were happy to talk about it as long as it could be confidential. They say, don't tell my neighbors, but go and tell the United Nations so you can help other people like me so that this doesn't happen again. And adult war children say the same thing. No, what you don't want to do is create special orphanages or special programs for these children that set them apart. But what you do want to do is acknowledge that they exist, that they have specific needs, and have that on the radar screen when aid organizations go into the field to deal with vulnerable populations. Have it on the radar screen of governments so that they take responsibility for making sure these children are registered, that they're not being discriminated against, and that there are some social mechanisms to assist their families.
Charlie Carpenter of the University of Pittsburgh has edited a volume of essays entitled Born of War. She's currently finishing a book on Bosnia's children born of war. Nice to speak with you. Thank you, Charlie.
Oh, my pleasure.
You can find photos and more information on children born of rape in conflict zones. That's at theworld.org. Coming up tomorrow on The World, justice for rape victims from the genocide in Rwanda. A court official says the women are ready.
I have discussed with most of the women, are you ready to testify? Are you ready to come before the court and to denounce these people? They say, yes, we are ready. We do not have to hide anything.
A proposal to speed up justice in Rwanda. That's tomorrow on The World.